Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible.
And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues with new wineskin as we pick up in Luke chapter 5, verse 36. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck.
Then he spake a parable unto them. No man puts a piece of a new garment on an old. If otherwise, then both the new makes a tear, and the piece that was taken out of the new does not agree with the old. They didn't have sanitized shrunk in those days. And so if you take a new patch and sew it into an old garment, the first time you washed it, the new patch, not being pre-shrunk, would shrink. Of course, the garment had already been washed enough that all of the shrinkage was out of it. But you put a new cloth into an old garment, the new cloth, as soon as you wash it, would shrink, and it'd just make the tear worse. So see, Jesus said, you just don't put a new patch on an old garment. It's only going to rip it up more. And also, he said, no man puts new wine into old bottles. Now, when they poured the new wine into the wineskins, there was a chemical reaction that created a gas. So if you would pour the new wine into the old wineskins, it would cause it to immediately ferment, and this gas would be formed. And the old wineskins, of course, were stiff because they were old. And being stiff, no give to them, the gas would develop and they'd just pop. And so you just didn't put new wine into the old skins, but you put it into new skins that were still soft and pliable. The gas would develop, but they would just expand with the gas because there was a pliability in the leather. And the wineskins were made of leather. And so Jesus said, you don't take the new wine and pour it into the old skins. They're going to burst on you. You put the new wine into new skins. And both then are preserved. And no man, having drunk the old wine, immediately desires the new, for he says the old is better. Now, he's talking about the old religious systems that he was coming up against. He's bringing a new breath of air into the religious scene that it becomes so stodgy that no one could hardly stand it. Now, rather than coming in to reform that system, putting the new cloth in the old garment, or putting the new wine in the old skins, he's developing a whole new skin for this new work of God. Now, those who are used to the old traditional ways are always upset when something new comes along. They say, oh, the old is better. And we see this demonstrated so often. New ideas, new thoughts are so often immediately rejected. People get caught in their old traditional ways, and they get upset if anything should come along. Well, the old wineskins burst. Chuck 1:1, blessed are the flexible, they shall not be broken. May God keep us flexible. As I grow older, I know the tendency is to get set in your ways. And I pray, God, don't let me grow old in that regards. Help me to always be open to what you might want to be doing. I have observed in the history of the church how many times when God wanted to do a fresh work upon the earth, he had to go outside of the organized systems because the old skin couldn't handle the new wine. And so we see this glorious fresh work of God, but he had to create a new skin in order to do it. And those who come from the old system so often are shocked and appalled at what they see. Kids sitting on the floor? You know, and they just can't handle what God is doing because it doesn't follow our structure. It doesn't fit into our pattern, you know, and all. But yet God develops the new skins for his new wine. Now it came to pass on the second Sabbath. Now he's going to deal with a couple of instances on the Sabbath day. We've been introduced now to the Pharisees. They're beginning to really get into it. And trying to find fault with Jesus and condemn him for the things he's doing. And they condemned him for eating with the publicans. He, of course, spoke out against their condemnation, telling them, hey, you guys are belong, you know, in your old skins, and so I'm just going to not try and, you know, give you the new wine. We're just going to create a whole new system here. And now Luke points out a couple of Sabbath day experiences where he crossed the Pharisees. Came to pass on the second Sabbath after the first. Now that's an interesting way of dating it. We don't know when the first Sabbath was, but on the second Sabbath after the first, he was going through the cornfields. And of course, that was the wheat, the little thing on the top where all of the grains of wheat are called a corn. And so they were going through the wheat fields, and the disciples began to pick these little corns of wheat, and they ate them, rubbing them in their hands. Now, around the latter part of May, when the wheat is turned brown and getting dry, as you are in the area of the Galilee, it is a tremendous, it's called the breadbasket of Israel, because they grow wheat there and it grows so well. The winter wheat does so beautifully up there. And so you can take this wheat and you rub it in your hands, and then you hold open your hands like this and you blow it, blowing off the chaff or the husk, and then you can eat the wheat. And it's extremely healthy. It, as you chew it, forms a gum. And you can just chew that gum all day or you can swallow it. But it's just very healthy. You're getting the raw, fresh wheat. And when I'm in Israel in that time of the year, I love to go through the fields and grab the wheat and do just like the disciples, rub it in my hands and blow the chaff off and eat it. And it's just so healthy and so good for you. Now, this was perfectly legal under the law. If you were hungry, you could go into a field and you could eat all that you needed to eat. You just couldn't carry anything. You can't take a sickle into the field and start harvesting your neighbor's field. But you could eat all that you needed in the field. So it was perfectly legal for the disciples to go ahead and pick the wheat and rub it in their hands. However, not on the Sabbath day, because you weren't to prepare food on the Sabbath day, nor were you to bear a burden, and the weight of the wheat would constitute bearing a burden. So they began to find fault with the disciples of Jesus. Why do you do that which is not lawful to do on the Sabbath days? And Jesus answering and said, did you not read so much as this, that what David did when he was hungry, and those that were with him, how he went into the house of God and took the showbread and ate it and gave also to those that were with him, which is not lawful to eat but for the priest alone. David was fleeing from Saul. He had his company of men with him. He came to the house of God. He asked the priest for something to eat. And he said, well, I don't have anything. And David said, I'll take the showbread here. Now, it was not lawful for any man to eat the showbread but the priest. They were 12 loaves of bread that they set out on the table before the Lord, representative of the 12 tribes of Israel and God's presence among the 12 tribes. And they would leave it out there on the table for 7 days, and then the priest would eat it. Well, David came along. He was hungry. His men were hungry. When the priest said, I don't have anything to eat, David says, all right, I'll just take the showbread. And so he took the showbread and he ate it and he gave it to his men to eat. Not lawful to do. However, human need transcended. Thank you. It transcended the law. Human need. Now, the disciples had a human need. Hungry. They were hungry going through the field. So they did what David did, in essence. The human need transcended the law, and they ate. And Jesus said that the Son of Man is Lord also. I rule over the Sabbath too, fellas. So it came to pass on another Sabbath, he was in Capernaum, And he entered into the synagogue and he was teaching. And there was a man whose right hand was withered. Now, Matthew and Mark both tell us about this incident. Only Luke tells us it was the right hand. But remember, Luke is a doctor, and so he's interested in details of a person's problems physically. And so he's careful to note it was the right hand that was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath day, that they might find an accusation against him. But he knew their thoughts. And he said to the man that had a withered hand, "Rise up and stand here in the middle." And so the man stood up, and Jesus said unto them, "I'm going to ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath days to do good or to do evil? To save a life or to destroy it?" Now, if you were asked that question, how would you answer it? On the Sabbath day, is it lawful to do good or to do evil? When is it ever lawful to do evil? When is it ever lawful to destroy a life? So really, they couldn't answer Jesus. And looking around upon them all, he said to the man, "Stretch forth your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored whole as the other. And they were filled with madness, not gladness. They were insane with their anger. And they began to commune with one another what they might be able to do with Jesus. He's really beginning to irritate them now. We see suddenly how ludicrous their position is becoming. And when your position becomes untenable because it is so ludicrous, then the only thing you can do is revert to violence. You know, you're whipped. Better fight, you know. You don't have any reason. You don't have any, you know, you've been wiped out. And so what do? You fight. Because there's no reason to your position any longer. So it should be noted that when Jesus said, "Stretch forth your hand," he was making of that man an impossible demand. The man could have argued. He could have said, "Lord, I can't stretch forth my hand. It's withered. Can't you see? I've never been able to use this hand. Do you think if I could stretch forth my hand, I would just have it hanging here by my side all the time?" And he could very easily have argued with Jesus and said, "Well, I just can't do it, sir. I wish I could, but I just can't do it." Because Jesus was making an impossible demand on him when he said, "Stretch forth your hand." However, rather than arguing with Jesus, he tried to obey him. When Jesus said, "Stretch forth your hand," he tried to obey him. Hey, all of a sudden he found out he could obey. "But that's impossible. I can't do that." But there it is. Jesus made an impossible command or demand of him. He chose to obey, and in the very choosing to obey, the Lord immediately gave him all that was necessary to obey. Now, your problem is you're standing and arguing. Jesus is making impossible demands on you. He's saying, "Be perfect, even as my Father in heaven is perfect." "Lord, there's no way I can be perfect. You know, I'm just, you know, my flesh." And you're arguing, aren't you? Jesus is saying, "Be strong." "Well, Lord, do you think if I could be strong, I'd be wallowing in this weakness that I have and going through all of this misery?" Jesus is saying, "Have victory." "Lord, do you think of how I want victory?" You know, and you're arguing rather than obeying. The moment you will to obey the command of Jesus Christ, as impossible as it may seem, in that very moment, he will give to you all that is necessary for you to fulfill that command. He does not command you to do anything but what he will not empower you and enable you to do it if you will only will to obey. I love it. Now it came to pass in those days that he went out into a mountain to pray. Again, Luke's giving us the insight in the prayer life of Jesus. And he continued all night in prayer. You men that spend the all-night vigils here in the prayer room, you know who is there with you every night? The Lord. He said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, I'm there. He was used to praying all night. You're in good company. He spent the night in prayer. Why? Because the next day, he was going to be making some very important decisions. From those disciples that were following him, he was going to choose 12 to be called apostles. Jesus prayed before important decisions were to be made. I think that that is a tremendous example for us, and we would be very wise to follow it when we have important decisions to make, to spend some time in prayer seeking God's guidance in those decisions. So when the day came, he called unto him his disciples, and from them he chose 12, whom he also named apostles. And he gives us the name of the 12, Simon, who he also named Peter, Andrew, his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon called the Zealot, and Judas, the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, who also was the traitor. And he came down with them and stood in the plain, and the company of his disciples, and a great multitude of people out of Judea and Jerusalem, and from the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, which came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. So now he is drawing people not only from the south, the area of Judah and Jerusalem, but they're coming from the coastal northern areas of Tyre and Sidon to hear him and to be healed. And they that were vexed with unclean spirits, and they were healed. And the whole multitude sought to touch him, for there went virtue out of him, and he healed them all. It is interesting that this declaration, and of course here you're talking, a doctor is talking to you again, a physician, Luke, talking about virtue going out of Jesus, but it is interesting to me that this follows his night in prayer. That this power now, this dimension, virtue begins to go out of him, and people were coming up and touching him in order to be healed. And he lifted up his eyes, and now from here to the end of the chapter, we have an abbreviated version of the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5, 6, and 7, we have a longer version. There are some differences, enough that some teachers do not believe that this is actually the Sermon on the Mount, but just another sermon in which Jesus touched many of the points that he touched in the Sermon on the Mount. There is enough difference that does support that particular theory. So he lifted up his eyes on his disciples, and he said, blessed be ye poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. You may be poor in this earth and on this earth's standards, but hey, you're blessed because the kingdom of God belongs to you. Blessed are you that hunger now, you will be filled. Blessed are you that weep now, you shall laugh. Blessed are ye when men shall hate you, when they will separate you from their company, and shall reproach you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake, for my sake. Jesus said, rejoice in that day and leap for joy. Now, I haven't seen any of you leaping for joy because someone was speaking against you at your job and got you in trouble, and they only did it because you were a Christian. I've counseled a lot of people with long faces. They've come in just discouraged, defeated, ready to quit because of the trials they were going through at the job because they were a Christian, you know. Oh, you can't believe the hassle I've gotten this week, you know, and my foreman, he's really upset and all these kind of stuff. And the Lord said, hey, when that happens, leap for joy. Rejoice. Why? Because your reward in heaven is great. For in the same manner did they treat the prophets. But woe unto you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe unto you that are full, you will be hungry. Woe unto you that laugh now, you're going to mourn and weep. Woe unto you when all men speak well of you, because this is how they treated the false prophets. But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies. Do good to those that hate you. Bless those that curse you. Pray for those that despitefully use you.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Luke on our next broadcast, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, if you'd like to order a copy of today's message, simply order Luke 5 through 6 when visiting thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse the many additional biblical resources by Pastor Chuck. You can also subscribe to the Word for Today podcast or sign up for our email subscription. Once again, that's thewordfortoday.org. For those of you wishing to call, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-WORD, and our office hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Again, that's 1-800-272-9673. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord be with you, give you a beautiful week, and may His word sustain you as you walk with Him in fellowship. May God really begin a powerful work in your life. May the Spirit of the Lord just really rest heavy upon you. May your life be like a light shining in a dark place, that others might be drawn to that light and find the source of the light, even Jesus. So God bless you and give you a rich week in fellowship with Him.
This program has been sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.
The 1960s became one of the most colorful periods in American history. The counterculture was dropping out and turning on. The Summer of Love was the stage for many dramas of change. And the most popular musical group in the world was singing All You Need Is Love. But one man in Southern California was reaching out with the answer, and the truth began to set people free. Author and pastor Chuck Smith began to share the love of Jesus Christ with a generation that was looking for love in all the wrong places. Now, some 40 years later, the gospel of love is still changing lives. In his book, simply titled Love, The More Excellent Way, Pastor Chuck Smith expounds upon the love that can change your life now and forever.
For more information on how to obtain your copy, visit a bookstore nearest you or call 1-800-272-WORD or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. That's thewordfortoday.org.